Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It's July the 12th. We are in Malach Beis, starting Paragraph of Chapter 6. Vayomru v'nei ha-Nevi'im el Elisha. The students of the Nevi'im said to Elisha, Hineinu ha-makom asher anachnu yoshvim sham lefanecha tsar mimenu. Behold, the place that we are sitting there in front of you is too small. Can't hold everybody. It's too small. So they said, Ne'ochana ad ha-yarden, let us go now to the Yarden. V'nikcha misham ish kora echas. And we'll take from there, each man will take one beam. V'nasa lanu sham makom la-shavesham, and we'll make for ourselves a place there to dwell. Vayomer, and he said, Lechu, go. The Gemara tells us that what happened that all of a sudden there's no room? Did Elisha suddenly get an influx of students? Why was there at this juncture no room for the students? So the Gemara says in describing why Gehazi, what he had done wrong, and there are several things said about Gehazi, but one of the things said is that he prevented students from coming to Elisha. That Gehazi was himself a student of Elisha, but that with the way he behaved, he prevented people from coming. Now, he was himself, Gehazi, a great Torah scholar. He's one of the ones who failed, as we've had before, like Yeravam ben Nevat. He wasn't on Yeravam ben Nevat's level, but he was a strong Torah scholar. What he did is that when Elisha would be giving a class, evidently one that Gehazi may have already been familiar with, so Gehazi would not go in. He would stay outside. And by staying outside, when other people would come by who would potentially be students of Elisha, and they would see Gehazi sitting outside, they would say, well, if Gehazi's outside, it must not be that important. It must not be worth it. So that would stop them from going in, because he would project a sense that it's not that what's being said is not that important. So when Gehazi was banished because of his tsaras, suddenly there is a huge influx of students, and there's not enough room. So they derive that from here, because only after Gehazi is sent away from Elisha, now there's not enough room. So they ask Elisha, should we go? We'd like to go to where the Yarden is, and we can make ourselves a dwelling place. And he says, go. Now, just because he says go, it doesn't necessarily mean he's going with them. He said to go. Vayomer ha-echad, so the one said to him, it's unclear who the one is, at least we'll talk about that in a minute. Ho'el na v'leches avadecha. Would it be your will that you go with your servants? Vayomer, and he said, ani elech, I will go. Vayelech itam, he went with them. Vayavo'u ha-yardena, they came to the Yarden. Vayigzuru ha-itzim, and they cut down the wood. Apparently it was plentiful. There was a lot of wood there. They cut it down in order to build for themselves a dwelling place. Vayhi ha-echad ma-pil ha-kora, and the one, the same one, as we just mentioned two psukim ago, he was knocking down a beam, knocking down a tree. Ves ha-barzel na-fal al-amayim, and the iron, the axe he was using, the saw fell into the water, and it was deep water. Vayitzak, and he cried out. Vayomer, and he said, Aha Adoni, woe my master, for who Shaul, it is a borrowed iron. So what am I going to do? I don't have the money to pay back the person from whom I borrowed it. Vayomer Ishoelokim, so Elisha said, Ananafal, where did it fall? Vayareu es hamakom, they showed him the place. Vayiktsav eitz, he cut a piece of wood. Vayashlech shama, he threw it there. Vayatzef habarzel, and the iron floated to the top. Normally, wood floats, iron sinks, and he threw the wood in, the wood went down, and the iron came up. Vayomer, Elisha said, harem lach, pick it up for yourself. Vayishlach yado, vayikacheyu, and that person sent his hand and took the iron. Who is the Echad? Who is this one? So the Medrash tells us that this one is the person that, not Elisha, but the one that Eliyahu brought back to life. The son of the Tsarfis that Eliyahu brought back to life. A number of prakim ago we had that. So this is her son. This person grew up and he became a student of Eliyahu, and then, upon Eliyahu going up to Shamayim, continued under Elisha. And it is Yonah ben Amittai, it is the famous Navi Yonah that we read about on Yom Kippur, that is the Echad over here that we are referring to. That Yonah, first of all, asked Elisha to come with them, and also he's the one where the iron fell into the water. Why is he referred to as Ha'echad, the one? So simply that would be because he was the most prominent of the students. He's the one, the singular student, the one who is most prominent. The Medrash says that there's also a comparison being drawn here between Yonah and the other singular human being. Who is the singular human being? Adam Harishon. Adam was only one when he was created. He was it. So what is the comparison between Yonah and Adam Harishon? Because Yonah, we know, was Boreach. He ran from Hashem. Has not happened yet. Later on in the story of Yonah, he runs from Hashem. And Adam ran from Hashem. Adam hid after he ate from the Eitz Hadas. Adam hid from Hashem. So the comparison of the two, both tried to run from Hashem. Neither, of course, was successful. But that is one of the comparisons between Yonah and Adam Harishon. It's very different, the reasons for running. Adam ran because he did an Avera. Yonah ran because he did not want to say a prophecy that would hurt the Jewish people. Nevertheless, there is that comparison drawn.
And also in reference to being called Echad, the Aleph from the Adam Harishon?
Well,
Echad.
Yeah.
The Aleph from the Adam.
Well, I mean, that's why Echad starts with an Aleph, because
yes,
it's one.
I'm saying maybe that's what their association between Yonah and Adam.
Okay.
Harishon.
I mean, the Medrash makes the point about being one, but yeah.
What is the point of this story?
We have to tell the story. Hold on. Wait a second.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, jumping the gun.
I thought you were going to.
No. Okay, now, when they were going to the Yarden, so it doesn't seem like Elisha was going to go with them. They asked permission to go, and Elisha said go, and it seems like he wasn't going to join them. Then Yonah says to him, that would it be pleasing to our master that you come with us? And he said, I'll go. So evidently, Elisha was not going to go unless asked by the students. And since he was asked, he went. Now, when they got there, then the person who asked him, which is Yonah, he lost the axe or the saw in the water, and Elisha brought it out for him. So it's clear then, or at least it seems, that a message that is being said over here is that had they gone without Elisha, then they would not have had the ability to get back that iron. So it's in the grand scheme of things, that's a minor issue, meaning it may have been difficult for Yonah to pay back the loss of the iron, but we're not talking about a significant event in the history of the Jewish people. So it seems then that what is happening here is meant to be a siman, it's meant to be symbolic of their dependency on Elisha and Elisha's need to be there, and the fact that had he not been there, life would have been more difficult for them. So that they had not asked him to come, it seems that they would have, of course, continued to learn from him, but they would not have had him come and join them in where they were dwelling. It would not have been that the Rebbe is living among the students. And it is possible that they were uncomfortable being in that close proximity to Elisha. We already had before that the Shunammis was afraid to walk in the door, that she stood at the doorway. And the Medrash over there, which I did not share with you at the time, but the Medrash over there does mention that it was terrifying to look in the face of Elisha. He was a very holy person, and to look directly at him was frightening. And it could be that the students, although they were his students, were uncomfortable with the prospect of him living with them. And so they would have gone, built themselves a place to stay, and of course come to study under him. But it would have been, there's the dormitory, mm-hmm. and then there's the, then there's the study hall. It's two different places. So Yonah is the one who does not want that to happen. Yonah recognizes the need to live with your Rebbe. Yonah, of all the students, recognizes what Elisha himself recognized. Because remember that Elisha is the one who was the Mishamish, was the one who served Elio. And that's why Elisha rose to prominence, was because he was the Mishamish. We talked about Gadol Shimusha Yoser Milimuda, that serving the Torah scholar is greater than actually learning from him. So Elisha understood that. Of his students, Yonah is the one who understood that the most. And therefore, Yonah asked him to come along. Once Elisha was asked to come along, he wasn't going to force himself among them. If they were uncomfortable, he wasn't going to make them. So once he was asked, he came along. Then the Hashgacha had it, Hashem had it, made it happen, that the if anybody was not sure whether Yonah's request was the appropriate thing to do or not, immediately there's a problem that is solved by Elisha, and the one who is helped is Yonah himself. So there is a clear sign from Hashem that this is the correct way to be. And therefore, we see another, we've had it before, but we see another indication here of the importance of trying to be to serve the Rebbe as much as possible, to be with the Rebbe as much as possible. Now, the in Pasuk Zayin, verse 7, not only does he make it float to the surface, but after he floats to the surface, it seems that Yonah did not want to take it. He didn't reach for it. It floated to the surface, and then Elisha has to tell him, Vayomer harem lach, pick it up for yourself, and Yonah sent his hand and took it. So there the Yonah is not willing to make any assumptions. Just because Elisha brought the iron up to the surface, he was not going to reach for it without his Rebbe's explicit instruction to do so. Now that doesn't mean that Yonah didn't eat lunch without asking Elisha permission. But here, where Elisha miraculously brought up the iron, who knows? Maybe there's something else that's supposed to happen now. He was not willing to make any assumptions about a nace that just took place, and therefore waited for his Rebbe to instruct him and then followed the instructions of the Rebbe. Yeah.
When I was thinking about this, the iron of the axe is the head
yes.
of the axe.
Right.
And it got toiveled in a mikvah. Okay? And then it came out. It was like, because Yonah asked him to go along, that they cleansed the head being with them, that everybody's cleansed.
Nice.
And the Shunammite woman who had said, I don't need anything, I just want to be with my group. Like it was the same thing. If you stick together as a group, then you have more kavod. You have, you know, a greater chance of getting your what you want answered because you're together as a group.
A group is more powerful than the sum of its parts. That is true. Right. That's a good point. Very nice.
But did anybody say about the mikvah or that?
I've not seen anything on that, but it's still it's nice. Nice idea. Nice idea.
You mean it isn't?
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah.
Is there a connection here between Moshe throwing something, you know, in the Nile and up comes a heavy object, or with throwing the wood in the bitter water, which is not the same kind of thing, but it's throwing a piece of wood in the water. I mean, we've seen this before, where something gets thrown in the water.
Well, we had before Elisha himself making something bitter sweet, like Moshe. But the Medrash here does connect the episode of Yosef, where his coffin, his bones were in the Nile when they were ready to leave, and Moshe brought up the coffin of Yosef in order to leave Mitzrayim. And here Elisha also brings up something out of the Nile, out of the Yarden. You do have that connection. It's just a little bit difficult to fully grasp the importance of it, because there it was Yosef, and here it's just the iron of the, you know. So it doesn't seem to be exactly synonymous, but there is that connection made. Yeah. Pasuk Ches, verse 8.
Right, but both of them are heads, because Yosef was the head.
Yes. Yeah.
We could connect it.
Okay. Pasuk Ches, verse 8. Umelech Aram hayonilcham b'Yisrael. The king of Aram was making war with Yisrael. The king of Aram has been making war with Yisrael for the past several prakim, the past several chapters, and he continues his ways. Vayivahatz elav adav lemor. So he advised his servant, saying, El mekom ploni almoni tachanosi. You should encamp in a certain place. The goal here was that he wanted to ensnare the king of Yisrael, Yehoram ben Achav. He wanted to catch him and to trap him. So he wanted his soldiers to lay an ambush and catch Yehoram ben Achav. So he tells them, I want you to wait over there. When he passes by, you will catch him and you'll bring him to me. Pasuk test verse 9. Vayishlach isho Elokim Amelech Yisrael lemor. So Elisha sent to the Melech Yisrael, saying, "He shomer me'avor ha'makom hazeh, be careful from passing this place, ki sham Aram nechitim, because that is where the soldiers of Aram are laying in wait." So Elisha had a nevuah that the soldiers of Aram were in a particular place, and he warned the king not to go there or to be careful if he goes there. Pasuk Yud, verse 10, Vayishlach Melech Yisrael ha'makom, asher omar lo, isho Elokim. So the king of Yisrael sent to the place that Elisha had told him. He didn't fully trust Elisha. This is, after all, it is Yehoram ben Achav. We're not talking about a tzaddik here. So he sent over there, v'hizhiro, and he warned him. V'nishmar sham, and he was careful over there. Means he discovered that there were, in fact, soldiers there that were dangerous, and he was careful. Lo achas v'lo shtayim. And this happened not once, and not twice, which means it happened several times. The king of Aram, when the first attempt to catch Yehoram ben Achav didn't work, so he had his soldiers lay in ambush someplace else. And again, Elisha sent, he foiled the plan. He sent a message to the Melech Yisrael, don't go there, or be careful if you go there. And then the king of Aram tried again, and again, and again. And every time, it didn't work, because Elisha kept on tipping off the Melech Yisrael. Vayisoir leiv Melech Aram al adavor hazeh. So the heart of the king of Aram became
troubled.
Okay, that's a good word. Troubled by this thing. Now, what would you think if this was happening?
I think you have someone in the inside.
Okay, morning. There must be a traitor. Vayikra el avodav, he called to his servants. Vayomalem, he said to them, Halo tagidu li, tell me, mi mishalonu el melech Yisrael. Who is the fifth column? who's here who keeps tipping off the king of Israel that we're trying to catch him? So one of his servants said, "Lo Adoni HaMelech, it is not so, my king, my master, the king. Ki Elisha HaNavi Asher BeYisrael, because Elisha the Navi in Yisrael, Yagid LaMelech Yisrael, can tell or tells the king of Yisrael, Es HaDvarim Asher Tnaber B'Chadar Mishkavecha, the words that you say in your bedroom. The words you speak, you think it's a private conversation in your bedroom. Well, it's not private. Elisha is privy to everything, and he knows. And you just can't hide anything from him. Vayomer, so he said, Luchu uru'u eichohu, go and see where is he, where's Elisha, ve'eshlach ve'akachehu, so I'll send and I'll take him. So if he keeps foiling the plan to catch the king of Israel, well then let's catch him. Vayugad lo lemor, so it was said to him, saying, Hinei v'do's son, that Elisha at that time was in Do's son. Elisha was moved around, as you know, and at that time he was in Do's son. Now, one can certainly ask about the king of Aram, that if you're trying to catch the king of Yisrael, and every time you give instructions, Elisha knows about it. So if you're trying to catch Elisha, you would think you know about it. Right, right. So one could just conclude that he had to have his head examined. It is possible that he felt that the king of Yisrael was being given special divine intervention because he's the king. And Hashem is doing it through Elisha. But if we get rid of Elisha, then there will no longer be a vehicle through which there can be divine intervention to save the king of Israel. And he may have thought that Hashem would not divinely save Elisha, because Elisha, after all, is not the king. Perhaps. The Gemara also says in several places a fascinating idiom in the Gemara, which is, Ein chavush matir atzma b'yeso asurim. A prisoner cannot get himself out of jail. The Gemara says that the Gemara has a couple of different ways of saying it, but the Gemara says, for example, in the Gemara tells a story in Maseches Brachos of a particular sage that was very ill, and another sage came to visit him, and the second sage said to the first one, "Do you appreciate these afflictions? Do you want to have them? Because they're good for your growth if you accept them properly." And the first one said, "No, I don't want them." So the second one davened and got rid of the afflictions. Then later, the second one got sick. So a third sage came to visit him. Said, "Do you want those afflictions?" He said, "No." So the third sage davened and got rid of the afflictions from the second one. So the Gemara asks, I don't understand, if the second one could get rid of the afflictions for the first one, why couldn't he just daven for himself? So the Gemara says this rule, this idiom, that Ein chavush matir atzma b'yeso asurim, a prisoner cannot get himself out of jail. Another way the Gemara says it is fascinating, just the ways that the Gemara phrases things is often very, very interesting, is Ein habar mismala mechul yaso. A pit cannot be filled up from its own dirt. As if you dig a hole in the ground and take the dirt and put it back in, it will not fill up the pit. And because there's air pockets and all that, it won't fill up the pit. But the point is that you can't necessarily take care of yourself, even though you may be able to take care of a bunch of other people, but you can't necessarily do it for yourself. So it could be that the king of Aram was aware of this concept and felt that perhaps Elisha couldn't protect himself, although he may be able to protect even the king, but he cannot protect himself. So any of these may have been the reason. But be that as it may, he feels that he'll be able to ensnare Elisha. Now, we're going to find, of course, that he will not be able to, but it's not going to be the same thing. It's not going to follow the same pattern of Elisha realizing that he's in danger and avoiding the problem. Because the way Hashem saves Elisha is much more direct. See, the king of Israel, he wasn't saved by directly responding to the threat. He was told to avoid the threat, and he did. Elisha is going to be given a much more direct way of dealing with the threat, and a much more miraculous as well, because, of course, it's Elisha. So, Pasuk Yudal, verse 14.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
Two things. One, they say one of his servants, so is there anything to it being one again? And Dothan, is this the same Dothan where Yosef met up with his brothers?
Okay, so in terms of the first question, the difference is that before it said ha-echad, the one. Here it's one of. Right. And Dosan, yes, we're gonna discuss that. So hold that thought for now. But yeah, Dosan, well, we'll mention now that you brought it up, that the other place where Dosan is mentioned is in the Chumash. It is mentioned in Parashas Vayeshev. It is where the brothers were when Yosef went to go and see how they were on behalf of his father, and then Dosan is near Shechem, and that is where they end up selling Yosef as a slave down to Mitzrayim. So we'll discuss that presently. Pasuk Yudal, verse 14. Vayishlach shama susim v'rechev v'chayo kaved. So the king of Aram sent there horses and chariots and a heavy army, meaning this is Elisha. He's not taking any chances. He's sending an entire battalion out to get Elisha. Vayavo Laila, they came at night. Vayakifu Alair, and they surrounded the city. So they're not taking any chances. They're going to catch Elisha. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech haolam shehakol. Vayashkei Misharis Isho Elokim Lakum. So the servant, the attendant of Elisha got up. He woke up early and he got up. Vayetzin, he went out. Vine Chayel Sove Vesoyir. And there's this army surrounding the city, Vesus Varachav, and horses and chariots. Vayomer Naroi Love. So his lad, this person said to Elisha, Aha Adoni, woe my master, Echanasa, what shall we do? We're surrounded on all sides. It's a huge army. Vayomer, Elisha said, Al Tira, don't be afraid. Ki rabim asher itanu, there are more with us, may asher osam, than are with them. Our army is larger than their army. We have a larger army. Now, where? What is it? So, Elisha endeavors to show his attendant that they in fact have a larger army. Vayispalel Elisha, Vayomar Elisha David, and said, Hashem, Pekach na esenav v'yireh, open up his eyes and let him see. Vayifkach Hashem esenei anar, Hashem opened the eyes of the lad. Vayar, and he saw, v'yinei ha'har, malei susim v'rechev esh. The mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire, Sevivos Elisha, around Elisha. So countering this puny human army was a supernatural army, a spiritual army, made of fire of horses and chariots, ready to decimate this army of Aram. So you would think the next thing that's going to happen is that the fire army will attack the human army and destroy them, which would be fun to read about, right? But that's not what happens. Pasuk Ches, verse 18. Vayeridu elav, they came down to him. The fire army comes down to him. Vayispel Elisha el Hashem vayomar. So Elisha davened to Hashem saying, strike this nation, this enemy, with blindness. Now, blindness, this is the same word that's used with Lot, angels, it says that the people outside of Sodom, outside of Lot's house, that they struck them with sanveirim, which can mean blindness. Rashi tells us it doesn't mean totally blind, it means that they were unable to see clearly. They saw things, but they didn't see well. They misunderstood what they were seeing. It seems from Rashi that this was more of a mental illness than a physical illness. That their brain was interpreting what they were seeing incorrectly. Vayakem basanveirim, so they were struck with this sanveirim, this impaired vision, kidvar Elisha, like the word of Elisha. So now that this army is struck with this difficulty seeing, vayomer aleihem Elisha. Elisha now speaks to the army. Elisha says to them, Lo ze haderech, v'lo zo ha'ir. This is not the way, this is not the city. You're in the wrong place to catch the person you're trying to catch. Luchwa acharai, come with me. Come after me. V'olicha eschem, I'll take you, elo isha sher tevakeshun, to the man that you are seeking. V'yolech osam shomrona. So he takes them to Shomron, which is the capital city of the northern kingdom. The Medrash tells us Elisha was not lying, because since he had already stepped out of this city, he was telling the truth that this is the wrong city. You came to the wrong city, because the man you're looking for isn't there.
He's here.
Right. He was there, but he's no longer there. So he brought them to Shomron. Chaf, verse 20, Vayihi kevoam Shomron. It wasn't like he brought them to Shomron, when they came to Shomron. Vayomer Elisha said, Hashem, pekach haseinei eile viru, open up the eyes of these people, let them see. Vayivkach Hashem haseineim, and Hashem opened their eyes. Vayiru, they saw v'yinei b'soch Shomron. They were now in Shomron, which means they were now surrounded by the army of the king. Because even though they were a large army, but they were not comparable to the royal guard, I mean, this capital city of Shomron has many, many soldiers in it, and now this enemy army were essentially prisoners. Vayomer Melech Yisrael al Elisha. So the king of Yisrael, that's Yehoram ben Achav, said to Elisha, Kiro so son, when he saw them, Ha'akeavi. My father, meaning he's calling him, that's a language of respect, shall I strike them? Should I kill them? You know, that now I have them. Should I kill them? Vayomer, so Elisha said, Lo sakeh, you shall not strike them. Asher shavisa bechar becho v'kashlecha atom akeh. That those who you captured with your sword and with your bow, do you strike them? Meaning, do you normally execute POWs just because? That's not what you do with POWs, with prisoners of war. And here, you didn't even catch them. So you don't just kill them. Sim lechem v'mayim lifneim, put bread and water in front of them. V'yochlu v'yishtu, they will eat and they will drink. V'yelchu el adoneim, and they will go to their masters. V'yichra lohem keira gedola, he made for them a great feast. V'yochlu v'yishtu, they drank. V'yishalachem, and he sent them away. V'yelchu adoneim, they went to their master. V'lo yasfu od gedudei aram lavo beretz Yisrael, and no longer band, right? The bands of Aram. This is not an army. This is bands of Aram. No longer molested the Jewish people in that way. Now that does not mean that they're not going to fight as a nation against the nation, as an army. That is still going to happen. But these raiding parties, these bands that were molesting the Jewish people, that stopped with this incident.
How come we don't hear of the Arameans ever converting? I mean, they've seen some amazing things. They've seen some
We did have Naaman.
Well, we just had him, but I mean, the whole, all the Arameans must have known what happened to Naaman.
It could be some of them did convert. Could be, but you're right. It's not noteworthy to the point where...
There's such amazing open miracles, you know.
Yeah, they're seeing some incredible things.
Also, how did they not give up? I mean, how many times can you try and fail?
Yeah. So.
How can an Israeli you say that? How many people failed you? Try and fail, thank God. Try and fail.
Okay.
Thank God.
Yeah.
And did the king of Israel finally realize
the
importance of Elisha by calling him my father?
No, as we will see. We're not done with him either. It's the kind of thing where when it's in front of your face, they're behaving and everybody's wowed by the whole thing, and then it wears off very quickly.
Of all these students of Elisha, are they all single? None of them have families, wives and families?
Oh, I don't know. I'm sure they have families.
Separated from them.
Could be. It could be. Could be they were gone for several, for some time to study and came back. I don't know.
I just was wondering what the setup.
I don't know.
And the school of prophecy.
I don't know. I don't know. Now, a few points over here. The Medrash tells us that you'll notice that Elisha here davened three times. He davened to open up the eyes of his own servant, his own attendant, so he could see the army of fire. He davened to strike the army of Aram with impaired vision. And then he davened to open up the eyes of the army of Aram. In the first time that he davens, it says in Pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 17, Vayispalel Elisha vayomar Elisha daven, and he said, Hashem, pekach na aseinav v'yireh, open up his eyes and he'll see. So he invokes Hashem's name in the davening. The second time, in Pasuk Yerches, verse 18, it says, "Vayispel Elisha el Hashem vayomar." Elisha davened to Hashem, and he said, "Hech noas hagoya zebasan veirim." Strike this nation with impaired vision. He does not use Hashem's name. Finally, the third time he davens, which is in Pasuk Chav, verse 20, it says, "Vayomar Elisha Hashem." Open up their eyes and let them see. So the first and third times he invokes Hashem's name in the davening itself, and the second time he does not use Hashem's name. The Gemara says, you may figure this out, because when he is davening for good, he uses Hashem's name. When he's davening for a plague, for something negative, he does not use Hashem's name. He is davening to Hashem. It says that explicitly, he davened to Hashem, but in the davening, he does not mention Hashem's name, but the name of Hashem should not be used on bad. Even though it's being used to save himself and the Jewish people, it's being used against the enemies of the Jewish people. Nevertheless, in invoking something bad, he does not use Hashem's name. That's an important lesson to be understood, that even when bad things have to happen, we still do not want that associated with Hashem in a stronger way, as good things are associated with Hashem. The Medrash also tells us that a person has different abilities, different limbs, and a person has more control over some of one's limbs than others. So the Medrash says, for example, a person's eyes, a person's ears, a person has less control over those organs, those limbs. What does that mean? So the Medrash gives examples. The Medrash says, if a person is walking in the marketplace and sees something that's inappropriate. So a person can immediately close their eyes or turn away, but they've already seen the inappropriate thing. Because since a person's eyes are open when they're awake and they're walking around, so if an inappropriate thing comes in front of them, they're going to see it. So it just happens. Similarly with hearing. A person's ears are always working, Baruch Hashem. So If evil speech is used, or lashon hara, or profanity, or something like that, person's ears hear it. Now, as soon as a person realizes what's being said is inappropriate, they can cover their ears. But at that point, they've already heard something. Because in order to know that there's a bad thing, you have to have heard it already. Just like in order to know that there's a bad thing to see, they have to have seen it already. So those organs are not fully in the control of man. The Gemara tells us, this is an aside, that Avraham Avinu, after his name was changed to Avraham, he gained control even of those limbs. And the Medrash explains that if something inappropriate would pass in front of Avraham Avinu's vision, he wouldn't see it. If a person would speak inappropriately, his ears would not pick up the sound. He was in control of eyes and ears, not the way we are, but even before the thing happens, he was in control. But normally a person is not in control in that way. However, a person's mouth, person's hands, person's feet, people have control over those things. People are able to decide whether to use their mouths for good or for bad, God forbid, and their hands and their feet. But then the Medrash goes on to say, but even a person's limbs that a person seems to be in control of, if Hashem wills it, they do not have control. And the Gemara cites examples. So when is a person not in control of their mouth? Give an example of someone who wanted to say one thing, but instead was forced to say something else. Bilam. Bilam tried to curse and instead it turned into a blessing. So we just had that. Now we'll see who may remember something from a while ago. Give an example of someone whose arm showed that he wanted to do one thing with his hand, but could not. Achashverosh,
And he puts a scepter out.
Okay, put out his scepter. I'm not sure if it was his hand or the scepter. But we had an incident in Malachim already. Someone whose arm got stuck.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Oh,
yeah. Yeravam ben Nevat, when he was on the Mizbeach, on the altar, he was trying to use his arm to say, get him, get the Navi. And Hashem caused his arm to be stuck. He couldn't pull his arm back. So there he lost the use of his arm. Hashem controlled his arm when Hashem chose to. And interestingly, when the Gemara wants to give an example of a person's feet not being in their control, it uses this example of Elisha leading them to Shomron.
Oh.
Now that's a fascinating thing, because the other examples are examples where Hashem himself manipulated the mouth of Bilam and the arm of Yeravam. Here, Hashem is not directly doing this. It is Elisha acting as the emissary of Hashem, leading these people to Shomron. Obviously, Hashem has everything to do with it, because it has to do with him having impaired vision. But still, it is fascinating that the Medrash is saying that this is an example of Hashem taking control of their feet and moving them where they were not intending to go. Fascinating idea. So the question is, what's with the fire, the army of fire? It didn't do anything. As I said before, it would have been very enjoyable to read about the army of fire, you know, taking care of these people. But that's not what happens.
But isn't the fire, because it says Lissamvir is kind of being blinded a lot of times by light. Isn't that fire?
Okay, it's possible. You're suggesting that's the method that was used to blind them.
Right, and then when they arrive to the camp, and he says, can you open their eyes? You don't need that army anymore, because now you've got the Israeli army.
Right. Army. Okay, so good. The second part is for sure true.
The idea of the Israeli army. When he moves the camp.
Yeah. No, but it was the Israeli army. That's what it was. That was
right.
It was. Yeah.
The early idea.
Right.
Right.
So you're certainly right that once you have them in Shomron, you don't need the fire army, right? Right. So could be. It doesn't tell us that that's the way it happened, but it's possible. It's possible.
Because of the word. Because a blindness, then it would say le'aver otam in ayin. Why is it using le'sanver? In modern Hebrew, le'sanver, when someone has his headlights on while you're driving.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
So simple is from light.
Right, but in Sedom, you have the same exact language. Hiku basan ve'rim. And there it doesn't say anything about light. Although they were angels. So who knows?
He had the hail and fire coming down.
That was afterwards. That was the other one. Okay. But
it doesn't say that the fire army went with them.
Right, it doesn't say that.
They didn't need them because they were sort of blinded.
Right, it doesn't say they went with. That is true.
And if the attendant couldn't see him, Elisha had to daven for him to be able to see them. How could they have seen him? The fire.
Okay, good. So, but what is the purpose of them?
No, well, I was not answering your thing. But
use that fire.
I kept thinking of Bilam and the donkey Hashem opened Bilam's eyes and he saw. So there were things around us all the time, but we don't see them.
Okay.
But also, if he blinded them, why did they need to bring him back to the camp and then release him? They could have just escaped.
Okay, good.
Like, why are you dragging them all? Say goodbye, stay blind, and I'll see you later.
Right.
You're releasing them anyways. So
right, you're going back on. Okay, good.
Same element.
Well, Eliel went up in a chariot of fire. Okay, so the purpose of the it could be as Dina is saying that the fire army is there all the time anyway. The Gemara tells us here that just as Elisha here revealed this fire army to his attendant, Moshe Rabbeinu did the same thing at Yamsuf, that before we crossed, when we were, our backs were against the wall, and we thought we were going to be destroyed, and we came to Moshe Rabbeinu. So Moshe says, Hisyatzvu uru'u es Yeshuas Hashem, stand and see the salvation of Hashem, Asher Yasa Lachem Hayom, that he's going to do for you today. that he's gonna that the Egyptians are gonna be decimated. So it's the Medrash says that Moshe Rabbeinu also opened up their eyes or caused their eyes to be opened, and they were able to see. I don't know the numbers, but thousands upon thousands upon thousands of fiery army that was ready to attack the Egyptians, and that he showed it to them. Now the truth is that Kriyas Yamsuf, the splitting of the sea and the destruction of the Egyptians, was done by Hashem, but there was an army of fire there as well to destroy the Egyptians. And the Medrash says, La Asid Lavo, in the future, the same thing is going to happen. That when the final redemption comes, that there will be, at a time when it appears that we are greatly outnumbered, and that we are unable to protect ourselves, and that we're about to be destroyed, then there will be a massive army of fire that will be there to save us. So But here the army doesn't do anything. At Kriyas Yam Suf as well, the army didn't do anything. So what is the purpose of it? It seems that the purpose of it was solely to make the attendant feel better. He was scared. He said, "What do we do?" Elisha says, "Don't worry about it. We're much more powerful than they are. Here, I'll show you." Boom. Poof. Look around. Do we need them? No, we don't need them. Because Hashem has other plans and how to take care of this army. But they're there. Don't think for a minute that they're not there. They are there. And the capability that Hashem has of using them, it's always there. It's always there, this army. So it made the attendant, the Mesharis, feel secure. That's all that happened. Same thing with Moshe Rabbeinu, it made the Jewish people feel secure. But in the end, that is not the way that Hashem saved them. Instead, he has Elisha lead them out of there and to Shomron, where they are, instead of killed and instead of held as prisoners. By the way, we've talked about this once before. What is done as far as the Torah is concerned? What do you do with POWs? POWs is a big problem. Mm-hmm. Everybody's had this problem. What do you do with soldiers that you capture? If you let them go, they're just going to go back and fight you again. And what are you supposed to do? Kill them? That's pretty barbaric to just kill them. What are you supposed to do with them? The Russians would do that. They would just kill the POWs, and they got into big trouble for that after World War II. They were taking the task for that sort of behavior. So what do you do with them? The Torah's formula for what you do with them is you make them slaves. That's what you do. A POW becomes a slave. They're your slaves. That's all. You keep them, and they work for you. You obviously split them up so they don't have each other to band together with, and they are slaves. So, I mean, otherwise, when you put them in prison, then you have to feed them and clothe them, and they're, you know, it's a drain on the national debt. So you make them slaves. At any rate,
you still have to feed them.
Yeah, but the government does that.
Right.
The owner does.
Yeah, and he does work for you.
Right.
You get more in return. He works your field. But here that's not what happened. They were not kept as slaves. They were not killed. They were given food and sent home. So what was the point? What's going on over here? So the Medrash tells us that what Elisha did over here was more effective than all the wars that took place beforehand, because it says they no longer came in. The Gedudei Aram, the bands of soldiers of Aram, stopped molesting the Jewish people. Because after this incident, nobody wanted to do it anymore. They were so taken with what happened that they were led to Shomron. They opened their eyes and they're in Shomron. They first of all, the fact that they were there was shocking to them, because they had been in Dothan and now they're in Shomron. And second of all, that they could have been killed and instead they were treated well and sent away. They stopped. There was no personal vendetta anymore between the individual soldiers of Aram and the Jewish people. Now the king of Aram has not yet made peace with the whole thing, and we will see that he's going to cause more problems next week. We'll see about that. But in terms of the individual soldier, the man on the street in Aram, they have learned from here they've learned from here to be more peaceful with the Jewish people. Which brings us to Dosan. Dosan, the Rashi tells us in Parashas Vayeshev, I will read it to you, about Dosan. Why he mentioned the city at all? In the Chumash, the fact that they were in Dosan, it doesn't seem to matter. So why does the Torah say it? So Yosef is looking for his brothers, and he finds a man, which the Medrash tells us was Gavriel, the Malach, and he says, I'm looking for my brothers. So the man says, they traveled from here, for I heard them say, Nelcha Dosaina, we will go to Dosan. And Yosef went after his brothers and found them in Dosan. Says Rashi, Rashi says from the Medrash that Dosan is an acronym.
Acronym.
Thank you. Not an anachronism. Yeah. An acronym. There we go. Right. So he says, Levakesh lecha nichle dosos shiamisucha bahem. They're looking for nichle dosos. A dos means a law or a method. They're looking for methods with which they can kill you. That's what it means. Nelcha dosaina. We will go to Dosan. They're looking for a way to kill Yosef. Dosan was a city, or I don't know how big a city it was. It was a town that was a place where there were methods there to kill people. Meaning you could buy weapons there. It was a town that was known for its either traps or weapons, ways of dealing with people who you don't like. And that's why they went to Dosan. Elisha happened to have been in Dosan at this time. Now, Elisha obviously wasn't there to look for weapons. He didn't need weapons. Right? But Elisha traveled all over. And the Hashgacha had it that when they're coming to get Elisha, he's in Dosan. So Dosan is a city which really lent itself to violence, violent ways of dealing with people. And the army of fire was there to deal with these people violently. That's what could have happened. But instead, Elisha leads them out of Dosan to Shomron, where they're dealt with peacefully and not violently. So that really adds to the whole thing, because here they had been in Dosan, which was a violent place, or a place that had potential for violence, and the contrast of instead being dealt with properly and nicely was very strong, which it helped bring these people around, that they no longer bore any malice towards the Jewish people, and there no longer were raiding parties going in from Aram to Eretz Yisrael. But as I said, we're not done with Aram yet. As we'll see, there's still more to happen. Yeah.
I have two questions. One, when their feet moved without them wanting to go where they went, maybe that was still on them for the rest of their lives, so they couldn't come in Israel to do the raiding. I mean, how do we know which way it goes, that their minds were changed or their feet still aren't changed?
It could be. It could be. The Medrash only says their feet were manipulated to get to Shomron. It doesn't say any more than that. So maybe. I don't know.
Okay. So that was one of my questions. And fire was also used in Gan Eden to protect people from going in there. Is fire always used to protect?
Well, you mean to keep people out of Gan Eden?
Yeah.
We know fire can be used to attack.
Is it like there was a fiery pillar that protected Eretz Yisrael, the people of Israel, from the Egyptians? You know, it just seems like the fire theme comes back up.
No. I just wouldn't use the word always. But yeah, I see the theme. Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah. Okay, very good.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.